The nine rode out of the draw at midnight. Once they were in the open, Johnny Cross and Sombro took the point in tandem. Red gave the two a puzzled look.
What are those two cooking up?
Johnny knows a way, but Sombro can smell an enemy in the dark.
With Harper's crowd, that won't be hard.
The horses' hooves were wrapped in cut-up pieces of blanket to muffle their tread, muting the ring of iron horseshoes striking rock. The riders filed out, hugging the irregular terrain at the foot of Buffalo Hump's north slope. Moving east, they avoided the open as much as possible. They wormed around rocky spurs, using ridges, shelves, and boulders for cover. It was black night. The moon was hidden behind the south face of Buffalo Hump. Starlight glinted on sharp-edged rock facets and outlines. The riders made for Ghost Valley. Buffalo Hump was a hill, a high hill, hundreds of feet tall, squatting on Anvil Flats. Its upper third was bare rock, the bottom two-thirds rock and dirt. Its northern face was bordered by jagged foothills and rocky ridges. Hidden among them was a box canyon. Inside that canyon lay Ghost Valley. A ravine 100 yards long led into the canyon. This pass was known as the Chute. Its mouth was flanked by a pair of towering stone pillars, the doorposts. Rock walls 100 feet tall enclosed the oval-shaped valley. It was watered by a spring that became a stream winding through grassy fields. The fields were littered with boulders and slabs from massive rock falls. Ghost Valley was a grim, lonesome place. Built by gods or devils of the wilderness and long abandoned by them, yet somehow retaining a lingering hint of their presence. A good place for war parties, rustlers, outlaws, and fugitives. It was now tenanted by Brock Harper and his 40 gun wolves. Here and there on the valley floor, trees had been felled and dressed to create rude lean-tos, logs and planks slanting across boulders and ledges. A corral held dozens, scores of horses. A separate enclosure penned rustled cattle to supply the outlaws with fresh beef. A number of smoky campfires dotted the scene, groups of men clustered around them. The hour was late. Many men lay stretched out on bedrolls under the open sky, sleeping, or trying to. A handful of others were awake, drinking, smoking, and chatting. On a rise in the valley stood a rugged, barn-like wooden shed, open at three sides. Mean as it was the premier shelter on the site. Here was where Harper housed his plum prize, the gun wagon. It was kept under heavy guard night and day, and was rarely out of the outlaw chief's sight. A fresh team of horses stood harnessed to the gun wagon at all times, standing ready to make a fast getaway should any unexpected danger strike. At regular intervals, the team was unhitched from the traces while a fresh team was harnessed in its place, keeping the animals at full strength and vigor. Smaller huts and shacks were grouped around the open barn like satellites orbiting a planet. They were occupied by members of Harper's inner circle, a cadre of lackeys who conveyed his commands to the lower ranks. Around the gun wagon, the fires were hotter, the whiskey stronger, horses faster, desperados more desperate. A case or two of rifles and ammunition had been unloaded early on from the wagon and distributed to Harper's inner circle of a dozen hardcore disciples. Each now carried a brand new Henry repeating rifle and boxes of cartridges. The outlaws, so gifted, had already taken much practice with the prized weapons. The ground of the target practice area was littered with empty brass shells. Not all the bunch had received the new rifles. To possess one was a mark of favor, a badge of honor among the raiders. All those who had taken part in the wagon hijacking earned weapons. But Harper had forbidden them to take the Henrys outside of Ghost Valley, since to be seen with one was sure proof of participation in the robbery. That included Kimbrough and the others who had ridden into Hangtown on Thursday. That was why the saddle scabbard on Dan Oxblood's horse held no Henry repeater, an absence for which the redhead was later profoundly grateful. Promises of amnesty aside, Red found it prudent not to have such incriminating evidence on his person. Harper was miserly when it came to doling out the Henrys to the rest of his marauders. They were crooks. He didn't trust them. Give most of them a brand spanking new repeating rifle and ammunition, and they'd likely as not take off on their own to raise hell, shoot up the territory, and generally do something stupid. He would not allow his outlaw force to be so summarily dispersed. Not when he still had use of them to pillage Hangtree County. Those rifles would have to be earned. The main body of his pack of gun wolves would get their Henry repeaters on the day they set out to take Hangtown and the surrounding ranches and settlements. A day fast coming. There'd been about 144 rifles in the wagon. Except for about a dozen he'd given out, the rest still remained crated in the hopper of the freight wagon, as did most of the ammunition. Now, in the dead of night, Harper made the rounds of the outlaw camp. It was one of his unscheduled inspection tours, an errand that might take place at any time during the hours of darkness and help to ensure that some sort of discipline and order was maintained at all times by the gun wagon guards. Harper carried a Henry repeater, the first rifle taken out of the first crate. It had hardly been out of his hands since the day at Mace's Ford. He brandished it like a royal scepter, emblematic of his status as a raider chieftain. He noted with pleasure the full complement of sentinels ringing his prize. Not that they were in the sharpest state of vigilance at this late hour, but at least they were awake, on their feet, and relatively sober. A good thing, too, for them. He was not above shooting a man for sleeping or being drunk on duty. It maintained order and encouraged the others in the performance of their tasks. No one must take his prize cache of weaponry from him. Not the United States Army, no posse of lawmen, no war party of rifle-craving Indian bucks, no Mexican banditos, and certainly not any of his own men.
They all want what I got, but it's mine, and I mean to keep it.
The rifles would bring him men, new recruits for his fast-growing outfit, the nucleus of an outlaw army that would tear through the Southwest.
Nobody takes what belongs to Brock Harper.
The moon edged into view west of the knob of Buffalo Hump as 9 deadly gunmen closed in on Ghost Valley. Sam Heller, Johnny Cross, Luke Pettigrew, Dan Oxblood, Sombro, Hector Vasquez, Gitano, Chicory, and Latigo. 9 mounted men, plus a couple of pack horses carrying explosives. The invaders took cover behind a rocky ridge about a quarter mile north of the mound. This was the staging area, the last stop where all 9 would be gathered together. Presently, they would divide into groups and go their separate ways to open the way for the taking of Brock Harper's hideout. Through gaps in the rocks, they eyed the chute that lay on the opposite side of a gritty, boulder-strewn flat. A campfire blazed at the mouth of the pass, flanked by the towering stone buttresses of the doorposts. Reflected firelight from within the ravine outlined the rocky portals with a yellow-red glow. Flickering glimmers of light on stone had an eerie spectral appearance. Red Oxblood pointed to the entrance.
There's 2 men on watch at the doorpost.
The enemy was far away, but the need for stealth was deeply ingrained in all the 9. 3 riders appeared, rounding the eastern curve of Buffalo Hump and riding west across the northern flat. Moonlight caused them to throw long, angular shadows across the gritty plain. Sam pointed to the trio.
Here comes the patrol, the night guard. Harper keeps riders circling the hump all day and night.
The riders came galloping across the flat, swinging south toward the chute. They slowed to a halt at the mouth of the pass, outlined by the yellow-red glow within.
They got to advance and be recognized by the watchman.
After a pause, the trio entered the chute, vanishing from sight. Luke did some quick math.
Now I calculate it takes each patrol about 2 hours to make a complete round of the hump.
2 hours and 20 minutes.
Hector Vasquez shook his head.
What makes you so sure, gringo?
My watch.
How can you read a watch in the dark?
I took off the glass covering and feel the position of the hour and minute hand.
Well, that's pretty good. I gotta get me a timepiece some of these days. I already got a solid gold tooth watch fob from Monty.
Johnny smiled.
Well, you're full of tricks, eh, gringo?
I better be.
Johnny Cross nodded.
We all better be.
Presently, three riders appeared in the mouth of the chute. Riding out from between the stony portals, they rode west across the flat. Sam's fingertips brushed the hands of his watch with a feather touch.
15 minutes. 15 minutes for one set of night guards to return and a new one to go out on patrol.
He closed the watch lid and carefully pocketed the watch.
So we got 2 hours and 20 minutes to get ready and do what we gotta do.
Make it 2 hours. Give the patrol that just left time to get well clear of here before we cross the flat and get into position.
And then we get the ball rolling.
That's right.
The last night guard to leave on patrol rounded Buffalo Hump's eastern slope at about 4 o'clock in the morning. The starry sky was still a rich purple-black, and darkness lay heavily on the sea. The incoming night guards rode 3 abreast, starting north across the flat. About halfway to the chute, a line of house-sized boulders spilled out of the foothills of the high humped hill. From the darkness of the rocks sped a dart that struck home in the breast of the guardsman riding on the left-hand side, knocking him out of the saddle. The other two were unaware of what had happened, except that the third had fallen off his mount. They pulled up short to see if he was all right. Something punched the middle rider in the back between the shoulder blades. He slumped forward in the saddle, sprawled face down across the horse, a feathered shaft sticking out of his back. The third man opened his mouth to shout, perhaps in fright, perhaps in alarm, or possibly in some mixture of both. An arrow took him in the torso. He looked down to see it protruding from his chest, its slender length still quivering, vibrating from the impact. It seemed absurdly fragile, so flimsy an instrument to take a man's life. Even as he had that thought, the guardsman died. A couple of mounted men came around from behind a boulder where they'd been hiding. Latigo, an expert horseman, gathered up the riderless horses, heading them off from running toward the chute. Close behind Latigo were Red Oxblood and Sombro, the latter slipping his long bow over a shoulder and across his back. Sombro had fired the bow from horseback, smoothly loosing one arrow after another, all three speeding unerringly to their targets.
Damn, you can teach the Comanches a thing or two about bows and arrows.
Sombro acknowledged Red's words with a nod of the head. Red helped Latigo round up the horses with the empty saddles. The animals were not so much scared as bewildered. It would take more than blood and violent death to spook the mounts of Brock Harper's outlaw band. Red handed over to Latigo the reins of the horse he was leading.
Here, hold the horses.
Where do you go?
To make sure they're all dead.
Red indicated the fallen guards with a tilt of his head.
None escape once Sombro sets his mark on them.
No offense, I'm just a man who likes to make sure.
Red rode to the nearest body. The corpse lay sprawled on its side, the shaft in its chest having splintered and broken when he fell atop it after falling off his horse. A mortal wound. Nobody could have survived that. Red went to the next guard, who lay face down with an arrow sticking out of his back. Leaning out of the saddle, Red prodded him with the tip of his rifle.
Dinner and hell.
He glanced up. The third and final corpse, that of the first guard to die, lay some distance away. Latigo rode up alongside Red, having finished securing two riderless mounts to a rope string trailing behind him. Sombro took the third horse in tow. No alarm sounded, no hue and cry given. The two watchmen at the chute remained unaware anything had happened. They stood inside the pass near the campfire. Each was armed with a New Henry repeating rifle and a brace of six guns. They stood staring into the outer darkness beyond the campfire. The fire was a mistake, though. Its light wrecked their night vision, hampering their ability to see what was going on around them.
Night guard's running a little late, Slim.
What do you care, Hank? They're the ones going off duty, not us. We're stuck out here till sunup.
That's them. Here they come now.
A figure stepped into view, emerging from where he'd been lurking behind the pillar of the easternmost of the doorposts. A stranger, Itano. His right arm bent and raised at the shoulder, hand holding a flat-bladed knife ready for throwing. The knife lodged in Slim's left breast, taking him in the heart. Slim sat down hard. One smooth rush of uninterrupted flowing motion, Gitano struck again, a second blade appearing in his hand, heaving it as a whirring pinwheel that took Hank in the middle, high in the belly. Hank reeled, staggered stiff-legged, the rifle slipping from his hands. It hit the ground hard but did not go off, skittering across a large flat stone. The slight twists and turns of the ravine that was the chute did not afford a direct view from its mouth to the interior of Ghost Valley. Therefore, none in the outlaw camp saw the watchman fall. Gitano gave the all-clear signal. A moment later, riders appeared, materializing out of black darkness. The nine were gathering. Sam, Johnny, Vasquez, Luke, and Chicory made up one group. With them were the pack horses. They were followed a moment later by Sombro, Red, and Latigo. The latter trailed a string of three horses, each with a member of the night guard slung face down across its back. All present knew their parts and immediately began doing what they had to do. Gitano retrieved his blades, wiping them clean of dead men's blood before returning them to their belt sheaths. Red and Chicory dragged the corpses of Hank and Slim to one side, hiding them behind a cluster of rocks. Sam and Vasquez began carefully removing gunny sacks and barrel kegs from where they were secured to the pack horses. The sacks held bundles of dynamite. The kegs were filled with gunpowder. They began stuffing the bundles of dynamite in the seams of rock underlying a massive overhanging shelf that jutted out from high on the west doorpost. Luke measured out looping lengths of fuse cord, passing them to Sam and Vasquez, who attached them to various bundles and packets of explosives. Sombro took a smaller burlap sack of dynamite and slung its carrying strap over a shoulder. Gitano and Latigo armed themselves with rifles and bandoliers. They donned the bandoliers first. The rifles were rigged with straps that allowed the men to sling them across their backs. Latigo also shouldered a sack full of dynamite by the strap. Dark eyes flashing, Gitano cut a glance at Sam.
Signal when you reach the top.
Buena suerte. Good luck.
Gitano nodded. He and Latigo exited the chute, rounding a doorpost and following the outer wall of the rocky spur that was the east wing of the pass. Going south toward Buffalo Hump for several dozen yards, they came to a place where the rock face was jagged and broken, forming a kind of jumbled, blocky stairway 100 feet up to the top. They started upward, scaling the side of the slope. Sombro and Red Ox Blood climbed the outer wall of the opposite spur that was the chute's west wing. Sombro secured the bow across his back and hung the quiver of arrows down his side. The redhead shouldered a sack of dynamite. A massive seam, like an inverted V, opened in the rock face, accessing the summit. The lower slope was lined with a fan-shaped skirt of rocks and dirt. Its upper half was stepped with stony blocks and ledges. Sombro took the lead, ascending with the agility of a young man. Red followed, making his way, but well behind. Inside the pass, Luke and Chicory finalized the job of mining the overhang of the west doorpost. Kegs of gunpowder were set in the wide base of the vein, while bundles of dynamite were placed higher up where the crack narrowed. Luke measured lengths of cord, cutting, fixing, and setting them, while Chicory manhandled the kegs and bundled the sticks into place. Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez worked together, arranging on a copper tableau. Using ropes and pieces of dead wood, they tied each of the three dead members of the night guard upright in the saddles of their horses. Extra arrows had been stuck into the corpses to magnify the grotesqueness of the sight. Vasquez checked his guns, various sets of which were holstered and slung on his massive form. Johnny readied for his ride, arming himself pistol fighter style as he'd done prior to the start of so many other raids, during the war and after. Two guns were holstered on his hips. A second pair of gun belts were crossed over his shoulders, holstered guns worn butt out under his arms. He carried two more guns tucked in his waistband, one on the side and the other behind him, nestled in the small of his back. A loaded repeating carbine lay near to hand in its saddle scabbard. A pair of hands curled over the outer rim of the top of the east rampart wall of the chute. Gitano's hands. He pulled himself up onto the summit. The crest of the spur lay flattish and about 20 feet wide, forming a pathway 100 yards long that thrust into the heights overlooking Ghost Valley. A moment later, Latigo joined him on the top. Gitano crossed to the far side, towing the edge of the inner wall. He glanced down to the depths of the chute, whose sandy floor lay 100 feet below. He had no fear of heights. He saw the others at the mouth of the pass, Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez in one group, with Luke and Chicory laboring over the explosives at the base of the west doorpost. Distant motion caught his eye, causing him to look up and turn his gaze to the opposite side of the chute. Sombro and Red stood on top of the western rock rampart. Gitano once again gave a signal. The double cry signaled that both pairs of climbers had reached the summit. Below, hats tilted upward, revealing upturned ovals with the faces of their compañeros at the mouth of the pass. Vasquez took off his big sombrero and waved it. They understood. Gitano stepped back from the edge, turning toward the north slope of Buffalo Hump, rising above them. He and Latigo started south along the top of the chute's east wall, making for the heights overlooking the outlaw camp. Atop the chute's west wall, Sombro and Red also set out for the cliffs enclosing Ghost Valley.
Let's go.
Johnny held a lead rope, trailing back to the string of three dead men on three horses. The men of the Night Guard, tied upright in their saddles, harnesses of sticks and ropes used to brace them, holding them in place, arrows sticking out of them.
I'll handle the rope work, Yank. I can get these plow handles of mine into action quicker than you can loose that sawed-off rifle of yours.
That's right, obliging of you.
That's me. I'm an obliging fellow.
Vasquez glanced sideways at Sam.
You ready to ride, gringo?
Yep. Hope you can keep up.
Don't worry about me.
I'm not.
Sam swung around in the saddle, facing Luke and Chicory over at the base of the west doorpost.
Ready, men?
Chicory nodded.
All set.
Better light up now.
Luke struck a match, holding it cupped in his hand, applying the flame to the tip of a fat cigar held clenched between his teeth. Chicory had a cigar, too. He leaned in to get it lit, flame glow underlighting his face. The son of a Cajun father and Mexican mother, his long face, with its pointy features, was all knobs, sharp edges, and hollows, set off by a drooping black mustache that would have done honor to one of the grumbling troopers of Napoleon's old guard.
This cigar tastes like crud, Mr. Yankee, if you pardon my saying so.
I wouldn't know. I smoke a pipe myself.
Well, you could have chose a better brand.
This way you won't smoke it all up before it's time to light the fuses.
Well, these are short fuses. Once they're lit, they'll go up pretty darn quick.
And then the walls come tumbling down.
Don't light the fuses until we're clear, you goddamn crazy gringo.
Wouldn't think of it. Give him hell, y'all.
Bon chance.
See ya.
Sam flashed a two-fingered salute from the tip of his hat brim. He, Johnny, and Vasquez started their horses forward, deeper into the chute. Chicory took a few more puffs on his cigar, thoughtful-like.
It's not such a bad smoke.
A rope line stretched back from the horn of Johnny's saddle, trailing behind him to the lead horse of the string of three. The horse's gait caused the dead men to jiggle and sway in the saddle, an eerie counterfeit of life. Threading the rocky gorge of the chute, the riders emerged from its far end into Ghost Valley. The Box Canyon was a high-walled cauldron dotted with a dozen campfires scattered around its stony floor. Lines of smoke rose up from them into the sky to form a hazy canopy over the scene, veiling the paling stars above. A stillness lay over the site. At this hour, it was quiet as a camp of rowdy, ornery, gun-happy outlaws would ever get. Most of them were asleep or dead drunk. A fair amount of activity and motion centered around the open barn on the rise. It was a patchwork quilt of light and darkness, animated by blurred figures backlit by fire glow. The newcomers turned right, circling around under the canyon's north wall.
That big shed is where the gun wagon is, according to Red.
They pointed their horses toward the rise in the center of the valley, making for it, trailing their grisly burden behind them.
Hey!
Their arrival spread a pall of gloom on those outlaws still up and carousing. Heads turned in the direction of the newcomers. Seated men stood up. Sleepers were nudged awake by their comrades. Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez closed in on the shed on the rise. The guards ringing it stirred, moving forward. One craned his neck.
What y'all got there?
Down to bring it on home. You make the call, Johnny. That Texas twang of yours beats my Yankee accent.
That's for damn sure.
He loosed the slipknot, freeing the rope line from the saddle horn, holding his end of the rope in his left hand, tugging sharply on it to urge the string of three horses forward. The lead horse came up on his left, drawing abreast of him. Arrows stuck out of the corpse in the saddle, plain to see in the firelight.
I said, what you got there? Say, what's that?
Comanches!
Johnny let go of the rope, slapping the flat of his hand down hard on the rump of the lead horse, startling the already unnerved animal.
Cow! Cow, get! Get!
The horse bolted, the other two following in its wake. The trio with their arrowed riders broke into a run, charging into the middle of the camp of masked outlaws.
Comanches! Comanches! The engines are coming! Engines! Comanches!
At the same time, Sam took off his hat and waved it over his head, broad, bold gestures that could be seen a long way off, even atop the rock walls ringing Ghost Valley. The bolting horses alone would have caused a commotion, as would the outcry of the dreaded word Comanches. Three corpses with arrows sticking out of them clinched the deal. That's when the riflemen on the ramparts opened fire. Gitano and Latigo on one side, Sombro and Oxblood on the other. Together, they unleashed a murderous fusillade that mowed men down where they stood.
It's Comanche!
The sharpshooters whooped and hollered in imitation of Indian war cries, shrieks echoing across the canyon, which was now a bowl of confusion. The outlaws reacted like a herd of spooked cattle, stampeding in any direction to escape the rain of Comanche lead. In a sense, it was funny. Harper's raiders had used the old dodge of hiding their crimes behind faked Indian attacks. On the other hand, they actually were in Comanche territory, with a real threat of stumbling into the real-life counterparts of the Indians they were impersonating. They fell victim to their own buildup. Horses penned in the outlaw corral panicked, spooked. They collectively shuddered in a massing surge. Milling, circling, they slammed against rail fence posts, bumping, clattering, kicking. Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez went into action, charging into the thick of the ring of gunwagon guards. A pistol snaked into Johnny's hand, spitting flame and lead. Spurring his horse, he rushed a mass of armed men, shooting into them. Dark figures fell to lines of light that were muzzle flares of the bullets spearing. Sam kicked in with his mule's leg, sawed-off Winchester, barking out bullet after bullet. He ripped out a concerto of concentrated firepower, mowing down a line of Harper's gun wolves. Vasquez, with a gun in each hand and the reins held between his teeth, peeled off at a tangent from his two side men. Piloting toward a clump of men around a campfire, he rode among them, cutting them down with gunfire. The raiders, for the moment, were mostly thrown into a blind panic. Mostly. There were some of them so iron-nerved or nerveless or so cunning and quick-thinking that they kept their heads even under extreme provocation. Such a one was Brock Harper. At the sound of shots and shouts, his gun was already in his hand, ready to shoot the three newcomers. But there was no clear line of fire with the chaos and confusion now loose in the outlaw camp.
Son of a bitch! Get out of my way!
His own men were in his way, his lieutenants, those of his inner circle, running back and forth to block his shots or catch them. Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez scattered, each to a different part of the camp, each sowing the maximum amount of death, destruction, and discord. Their horses wheeling, veering, reversing, rearing, keeping the outlaws from getting a bead on their riders. Harper was in the center of the storm.
Keep your heads, you dumb bastards! Can't you see what they're doing? They're hoorahing you like we do to the townsfolk! Hold your ground and shoot, you sons of bitches!
He was shouting into the wind, the whirlwind. Some few of his men, very few, rallied to him, around him. They were guided by his bullish clamor, the bellowing of a gored bull. They stood their ground and started shooting at the hijackers when they could see them, which wasn't often or easy thanks to the evasive maneuvers of the intruders. Sam and Johnny had the same idea, each made for the gun wagon. Johnny neared the open barn, coming in sight of the wagon with its team of harnessed horses. A line of gunmen formed up in front of it. A loaded pistol in his hand, Johnny burned down several men, opening holes in the line, but the others were shooting back. A stallion in a blind panic kicked down the top rail of a section of corral fence, hitting its forelegs up over and jumping clear. It broke for open ground, running wild. A mass of horses swelled against the section of fence, their irresistible weight and energy knocking it down, tearing a big gap in the corral. Crazed horses, eyes rolling, nostrils and mouths foaming, galloped through the camp.
The horses is busted loose! Don't let them get away!
Nobody wanted to be without a getaway horse at a time like this, marooned afoot out here at Buffalo Hump in the middle of nowhere, as the hideout was getting shot to pieces. A streaming mass of escaped horses ran between the gun wagon and the rest of the camp. His horse rearing up, Sam pulled up short, reining in to avoid running into a wall of gunfire. The gun wagon guards had got their bearings now. Harper's counterattack was starting to pay off. Sam and Johnny caught sight of each other.
Time to vamoose,
I reckon.
Tightly wheeling their mounts around in the opposite direction, they turned, retreating. Vasquez came in at a tangent, overtaking and passing them as they all made for the chute. Above, aloft on top of Ghost Valley's curved western wall, were Sombro and Dan Oxblood. They'd set down their rifles after pouring volley after volley down into the outlaw camp, firing and reloading until the barrels were red hot. Now Red smoked a cigar while Sombro fitted an arrow to his bow. A special arrow, with a stick of dynamite tied lengthwise by thin strips of tough rawhide to the shaft.
Ready?
See?
Here goes, then.
Red touched the glowing tip of the cigar to the end of the fuse protruding out of the stick of dynamite. Sombro loosed the arrow, sending it on a high arcing trajectory that lofted it up over the canyon bowl before dropping it down. It fell in the vicinity of the gun wagon. What order Brock Harper had managed to stabilize out of the situation vanished. These outlaws weren't stupid, at least not where the basics of winning and losing were concerned. Dynamite changed the equation. At the gun wagon, handlers had been holding on to the traces, doing their part to keep it immobilized. The team of horses, already agitated, was maddened now by the explosion. Blindly, they surged forward, obsessed solely with the urge to run. A handler slipped, losing his footing.
Marty, I can't hold him!
He fell under the horse's hooves and was trampled to rags and jelly. Harper bulled his way to the fore, making a beeline for the wagon, the focus of his hopes, needs, and all-consuming ambition, gun in hand.
I'll kill any man turns loose of this wagon.
Harper made his way to the gun wagon. It rocked back and forth on its springs as men held to its sides and the traces, trying to restrain the straining team that heaved at the harness in its collective will to run, run, run.
Get out of my way, you yellow-bellied sons of bitches!
Harper clambered up into the front seat of the wagon, gathering up the ends of the sets of leather reins, clutching them in oversized ham-like hands. Hauling on them, he leaned back, putting all his considerable strength and weight into the effort.
Whoa! I said whoa, you horses, whoa! Ease up, damn you, whoa! Mangy, brainless cayuses, pull back, damn it! Damn, double damn you!
Arkansas Claude Fenner hauled himself up and over the sidewall, pulling himself on top of the crates of rifles and cartridges. Harper almost shot him until he saw who he was.
Get up here, Fenner, and grab hold of that brake with both hands. Give it all you got.
Fenner threw his legs into the booth, landing hard on the passenger side of the thinly cushioned seat board. He gripped the axe handle sized and shaped handbrake.
I got it, Brocky! I got it! Oh, the horses, they're gentling now!
A second blast followed, coming even closer than the first. Shaking the earth, shivering the pen, it brought the timbered framework and boarded over canopy down, around, and on the wagon and team of horses. Debris rained down on Harper and Fenner, battering, beating, and bruising.
Oh, that tears it!
The team lurched forward, pulling clear of the collapsing shed. Boards and timbered uprights coming apart on all sides. Horses and wagon broke free into open air and space. The two lead horses in tandem saw their opportunity and took it on the run. The other pairs of the team followed, obedient to the single paramount impulse to flee. Some of the handlers and gun guards ran alongside or behind the rear of the wagon. They grabbed at it, clutching the top rails, pulling themselves on board, or simply holding on for dear life. A luckless figure loomed up in front of the runaway team. He disappeared under them, trampled by iron-shod hooves and run over by wagon wheels. The gun wagon tore down the rise. It hit a bump on the flat that flung a couple of hangers on loose. A side man went under the wheels and was cut in two. The wagon thundered east across the canyon floor. Harper and Fenner were hurled about, fighting to keep from being thrown from the wagon. The handbrake was broken, useless. Its restraining gears and ratchets torn free. A jagged board end had opened a wicked gash in Harper's forehead, spilling blood down his face. He pawed his eyes with the back of his hand, trying to keep the blood out of them. No ordinary man, though, he who was being tossed around in the dice cup of the gods. He was Brock Harper. Harper braced himself to keep from falling. Groping around on the floor of the boot, he found and gathered up the reins, clutching them so their ends came to the tops of his fists. Blinking through blood and stinging sweat, Harper took stock of the scene. The runaways were plunging north across the canyon floor, racing toward the near end of the chute. He glanced back over his shoulder. Four men were in the back of the wagon, holding on to the sides as the vehicle rocked and swayed. Sour-faced Hap Engelhart was one, Cy Treadwell, two more of the gang. Behind, Ghost Valley was a hellish scene. Smoke, fire, wild horses, bodies strewn about. Engelhart cupped a hand to his mouth.
Can you stop them?
No stopping them now. Gotta let them have their heads until they run themselves out and slow down. Could be worse, though.
Hey, how's that?
I still got the guns.
Yeah, there's that.
Look out, we're going into the chute.
Nothing to do but ride it out.
Harper was getting a little bit of response from the team, enough to rein in the animals a few degrees when they showed sign of going off course. The runaway team plunged into the chute. Harper felt like a lead ball fired down the length of a cannon barrel. A few feet of play opened on both sides between the wagon and the ravine walls. There was a chance of getting clear, though, as long as the team kept to their straightaway course. The hole at the far end of the chute widened, nearing. Suddenly, team and wagon bulleted out of the pass, zooming past the doorposts into the open. Fenner clapped a hand on Harper's shoulder.
Oh, by God, Brocky, we made it! I don't know how you did it, but you did!
Oh, he ain't out of the woods yet. The team's still out of control.
Hell, let him run till he's winded. Now that we's in the clear, we can just...
The biggest blast yet brought down much of the west doorpost. The concussion battered those in the wagon, swatting Hap Engelhart and Cy Treadwell and the other two in the back of the wagon into space, a giant invisible hand brushing away gnats. The column of the west doorpost cracked asunder, freeing a massive overhang to come crashing down. A few surviving gun hands in Ghost Valley found themselves imprisoned behind a man-made mountain of stone, trapped like flies in a corked bottle. Moments earlier, after shooting up Ghost Valley, Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez fled through the chute, reining in just outside it. As the runaway gun wagon closed in on the mouth of the chute, the three riders joined Luke and Chicory, taking cover behind the curve of the east doorpost, putting the bulk of the rocky spur between themselves and the explosions on the western column. As the thick clouds of dust and smoke began to lift, Luke and Chicory were startled to find themselves alone. Sam, Johnny, and Vasquez were nowhere in sight.
Where'd they go?
The team of runaway horses hitched to the gun wagon would have gladly continued running to the edge of the eastern horizon to meet the rising sun, but they lacked the stamina. They shot their bolt during the breakneck flight from Ghost Valley. Nostrils and mouths foaming, sides heaving, flanks glossy with sweat. They were out of breath and exhausted. Their pace began to lag. Harper relaxed his furious concentration on working the traces of the team to cut a sideways glance at Fenner. The rangy Arkansan sat huddled beside him, haggard, white-eyed, punched into a ball. Swallowing hard, Fenner dared to raise up his head, looking around. Looking over his shoulder, he saw that the back of the wagon was empty of all passengers.
Angle hard and tread wheel, now there's...
Gone.
The team's pace flagged, the gun wagon slowing. Spirits lifting, Fenner managed to force a halfway grin.
By God, Brock! We made it!
Harper was slapped hard in the face by something wet, so hard that for an instant his face was pushed out of shape. Fenner slammed into him, giving him a jolt. Fenner now sat slumped beside him, sagging, inert. Still clutching the reins, Harper rubbed the back of a hand against his face to clear it. It came away smeared with red stuff, blood mixed with tissue and bits of bone. A big hole the size of a silver dollar showed in Fenner's left breast, wetly red and glistening. Trying to look everywhere at once, Harper could discover no shooter. Despite their fear, the horses slowed, winded, exhausted. The horse is a fretful animal. So, in that instant, was Brock Harper. Fenner had been pounded out of existence as though struck by the hammer of God itself. A killing round fired by an unseen marksman. First rays of breaking day came slanting off the planet's eastern rim. A sunbeam glinted off a reflective surface in the distance near a rocky ridge ahead of Harper and to his right. A glimmer of motion accompanied the diamond dazzle. It was so far away, Harper had trouble making it out. The gun wagon continued its eastward course across the flat. The blurred image resolved itself into a rifleman on horseback, the marksman who'd shot Fenner. The rifle now pointed at Harper. The team continued forward, narrowing the gap between Harper and his unknown adversary. Harper had no rifle handy. He'd lost his during the ruckus in Ghost Valley. The filled wagon carried crates of rifles, but none Harper could put to use in a hurry. All Harper had was a six-gun. At this range, it would be ineffective against a rifle. Harper reached anyway. He let go of the reins in his gun hand, clawing at the pistol in his holster. Harper leveled it at the distant figure ahead.
You son of a bitch!
A blow slammed him, knocking him sideways to the left and out of the wagon. He lay sprawled on the ground. The riderless wagon continued east, drawing away from him, dwindling.
Stop! Damn you! Stop!
His enraged thoughts screamed, but his lips would not move. The gun still filled his hand. He couldn't lift it. That was funny, since he was used to having an inexhaustible reservoir of strength and energy to draw from.
I'll just rest here for a while.
Harper felt tired. He decided he'd lay where he was for a while, resting until he got his strength back. The bullet hole in his chest loosed his lifeblood into thirsty sands that soaked it up. Sam Heller lowered his rifle and began taking it apart, removing the additions that turned the sawed-off mule's leg into a long-range rifle, good for sharpshooting. Nimble fingers unfastened the bolts, securing the wooden buttstock to the rear of the cut-down Winchester. He fitted the stock into a long, flat wooden carrying case. Unscrewing the elongated barrel extension attached to the Winchester's chopped barrel, he put that in the box, too. He didn't need the telescopic sight at this range. He closed the lid and lowered the box to where it was lashed to the side of his saddle. The masterless gun wagon rolled past him in his place of concealment and kept going east. To the west, far away, but coming up fast, were two riders. Sam turned his horse, withdrawing farther behind the rocky outcropping where he'd been lurking. He reloaded the mule's leg. The two riders raced east, chasing the wagon. They were Johnny Cross and Vasquez. Their horses ran neck and neck. Johnny leaned way forward on his horse, bent almost double. Vasquez used a rawhide quirt to lash his horse to greater speed. They flashed past the outcropping, oblivious of Sam on Dusty, hiding behind a tangle of scrub brush. He let them go. Johnny and Vasquez closed in on the gun wagon, Johnny coming up on its right, Vasquez on its left. Leaning out of their saddles, they each grabbed a harness strap of one of the two lead horses. Control the lead horses and the rest of the team would fall into place. Johnny and Vasquez slowed the horses, finally bringing them to a halt. Dismounting, they faced each other.
The gun wagon.
See, the gun wagon!
Here it is.
And here we are.
They eyed each other.
Want it all, don't you?
And you?
Johnny smiled thinly. Vasquez nodded, as if confirming a thought he'd had.
For such as us, there is no other way. My padrone needs the guns, not a mouthful of empty promises from the big gringo.
Where'd that Yank go, anyway? I lost him after the blast.
I hope a mountain fell on him. No matter, our business will not take long.
All the while I was growing up, I always heard you was fast. That was a long time ago.
You think so, little gringo?
You try me.
Johnny's smile broadened into a grin of genuine pleasure.
I was hoping you'd say that.
They squared off, face to face, barely a half dozen paces separating them.
Anytime.
A bullet tore into the ground between them, spraying them with rock chips and dirt. Startled, they both whirled to confront the shooter. Sam Heller sat on horseback, holding the mule's leg leveled. He'd ridden up unseen during the face-off, using the gun wagon for cover.
You're two of the most ornery cusses I ever saw.
Sam shook his head in mock sadness.
Haven't had your fill of killing yet?
Not quite.
Johnny stepped back, turning, positioning himself so he'd have a line of fire on Sam or Vasquez. His hands hovered inches above hip-holstered gun butts. Vasquez did the same, stepping to the side.
It's good that you come along now, gringo, so we can finish it.
You feel that way too, Johnny?
You ain't a bad fellow with that for a northerner. But I'll feel better with these guns in the hands of a good old Texas boy like me.
You're drawn against a leveled gun.
You can get one of us, but not both.
That's right, gringo. You try for me, the little gringo gets you. You try for him, I get you.
Tell it to the army.
They came out of the rising sun, out of the bright new dawn. An entire cavalry patrol, fully armed and fresh. Sam had faced that way, so he saw them coming from a long way off. Johnny and Vasquez had their backs turned to that direction and were unaware of the cavalry's imminent arrival. The cavalry column came forward, guidons flying, their banners bright. The column parted, one file swinging left, the other right. The horse soldiers fanned out into a rank that curved around the gun wagon, barring it with an arc of armed men with shouldered carbines. Johnny's smile melted, his face stiffening. Vasquez bared his teeth in a snarl.
Best keep those guns holstered, men.
Captain Ted Harrison and Sergeant Oakes rode forward.
Here we are on Sunday dawn, as agreed on. The gun wagon?
This is it.
Who are these two?
Harrison indicated Johnny and Vasquez.
Friends of mine. Couldn't have done it without them.
Harrison nodded.
Tell the men to lower their weapons, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Stand down!
The phalanx of horse soldiers stopped pointing their carbines at the trio at the wagon. Johnny and Vasquez breathed easier.
What about Harper?
That's him, lying yonder.
Sam pointed toward the body sprawled on the ground 100 yards westward.
Good. Any outlaws?
What's left of them are pinned in Ghost Valley. We blew up the chute. We've got 6 men back there, 2 outside what's left of the doorposts, and another 4 on top of the canyon with rifles and dynamite in case there's any fight left in the gang. They each come in for equal shares of the reward money.
I'll send some troops there directly.
By the way, Captain, this is Hector Vasquez, foreman on the Rancho Grande, the spread I was telling you about.
My compliments, Senor Vasquez. Please send my thanks to Don Eduardo and tell him that the Army would be pleased to contract with his ranch to supply fresh beef to Fort Pardee.
I will do so, Excellency. Gracias.
This young fellow is Johnny Cross. He's been in it with me from the start.
Good work, Mr. Cross.
Thanks, Captain.
Johnny's a Mustanger, and if he can catch and break horses like he shoots, you can't go wrong.
We can always use plenty of fresh mounts at the fort. We'll work out the details when you come into my office to pick up your share of the reward money.
Much obliged, Captain.
We'll go round up the rest of the outlaws now and settle the financial arrangements later. Sergeant, leave a detail here to guard the gun wagon and move the rest of the troops out to Ghost Valley.
Yes, sir.
I'd better come along to identify our bunch at the canyon and make sure there aren't any wrangles between them and the troops.
Good idea, Mr. Heller. Thanks.
Well, in a day's work, Captain. A profitable day, between the reward on the gun wagon and the bounties posted on Harper and most of his gang.
Harrison nodded, turning his horse and riding off to rejoin his troops, who were forming up to move out. A sizable detail would remain behind to guard the gun wagon.
You coming?
I ain't letting you out of my sight until I get paid off.
Me too. You're too full of tricks, Gringo.
He and Johnny mounted up, taking their place with Sam at the head of the cavalry column. They and the troops moved out, heading westward toward Ghost Valley. Sam leaned toward Johnny.
Do me a favor. Don't sell the army any stolen horses.
I'll try. Reckon you'll be moving on once you collect your bounty money, eh, Yank?
Not at all. Nice, peaceable place like this, I think I'll stick around for a while.
That's what I was afraid of.
I'll put the Heller brand on Hangtree County.
His vow held a threat, a promise, and the herald of a new day. Savage Texas is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with the Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Danny Gavigan, Michael Glenn, Nanette Savard, Thomas Keegan, Eric Messner, Tim Carlin, Bradley Smith, Dylan Lynch, Drew Copas, Gary Tells, Michael John Casey, Tim Pabone, David Harris, Nick DePinto, Scott McCormick, Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Yasmin Toison, Alyssa Wilmoth, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Damian Chop Richardson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. With original music by Thomas Hogan and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Savage Texas, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Eagles series, available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in graphic audio.
What kind of sheriff are you anyway?
Where will it stop? Who will stop the crime wave? Is our bank next? Will our citizens lie dead in the streets? Fire him!
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Some got blown. I got a whiff of powder or something.
I'll get Sanders. You stay here and stay armed. Don't know what's in the building or the bushes.
Having the right man wearing the star is important to a business like mine. I sell good times, Sheriff. There's lawmen that just don't like anyone having a good time in their towns, and then well, there's trouble.
Arrest the whole lot! Arrest Ralston! We can't have this! Doubtful's reputation is ruined!
For what?
For public indecency.
I don't know any law like that, Mr. Mayor.
Then invent one! I want them out of my town by morning.
Arrest them for lewd behavior. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. But I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back. You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia.
I hear you want to marry me. So, let's talk.
Name your deal.
I'll marry you for 1 month.
I don't think I could swing that.
What do you think I am? I don't believe in free love.
You're expensive, all right.
Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Available now in graphic audio.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down. Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
What is the meaning of this?
No, Galatinov will leave this place alive.
You goddamn dogs!
Mother! Run, Mikhail! Run!
Get the boy!
Father?
I'm not your father, boy. Why do you persist in calling to ghosts?
I want to go home.
You are home.
Lieutenant Colonel Vogt, please, come in.
I don't have much time. Field Marshal Rommel is waiting. I assume these are up to the minute?
Yes, sir.
We'll all toast the success of Panzer Army Africa on the banks of the Nile. Heil Hitler.
Mein Gott.
Help me! Help me!
Hold up! Hurry! We've got to stop that beast! Go! Run it down!
It knows.
That man knows. We're in a minefield!
Shall I wait here, sir?
Yes, for now.
So Gallatin served with distinction in North Africa? That was 2 years ago. If he's been out of service since then, what makes you people think he can handle the job?
Because Major Gallatin is a professional. Major?
Come in.
Couldn't have picked a more desolate place, could you?
I couldn't find one. I am retired.
But, sir, can we at least brief you on what the mission involves?
All right.
There's an American agent in Paris.
Adam's his code name.
Your intelligence boys got a coded message from Adam a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said there's something big in the works. He was being watched, and he had information that had to be brought out of France by personal courier.
By 90 days after D-Day, we're planning on having more than 1 million boys over there to kick Hitler's ass. And we'd sure better know what's in the Nazi's hand.
Death. I'm sorry. Find someone else.
But sir...
I said I retired.
Let's talk, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Michael, I want you to go to Paris.
Is it that vital?
Yes. If the Gestapo's watching Adam so closely, you can be certain he has information they don't want getting out. With your special talents, there's a possibility you can get in and out under the nose of the Gestapo.
All right, but my parachute training's rusty.
Major! We're screwed! You want to scrub the drop?
I'm going!
Welcome to France. You'll be leaving grand entrances, don't you?
Any entrance I survive is grand.
We have to get you to a safe place. Are you ready to run?
Always.
From international best-selling author Robert R. McCammon, a compelling tale of espionage and supernatural horror. The Wolf's Hour. In rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.